Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 19th year. This podcast is sponsored by iGamingPlayer.com, the premier affiliate marketing site that delivers quality players to your online casino, sportsbook, or poker room with transparency and integrity. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Wolf Power, the CEO of the Grand Ho Tram Resort in Vietnam, on the state of gaming in that country and the increasing role that the property is playing in the southern part of Vietnam. As a kid growing up in Detroit, spending time in Asia was the farthest thing from Wolf Power's mind. But after a stint with a tribal casino in Michigan, he took a leap of faith and joined Las Vegas Sands as they were opening the Venetian Casino Resort in Macau. Power spent nearly 20 years in Macau with a variety of companies, and when he got the opportunity to run a property in Vietnam, he jumped on it. Grand Ho Tram Resort had been sold to hedge fund Warburg Pincus, which hired Power to take over. But the day after he arrived, the pandemic shut down all gaming operations in the world except Grand Ho Tram. Power explains why and how that property remained open and how it could not only survive but prosper. He spoke with me from his offices at Grand Ho Tram in March. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. My guest today is Wolf Power, the CEO of the Grand Ho Tram Hotel and Casino in Vietnam. Wolf, thanks for joining us. I first met you early in Macau when I first went there. It was the opening of the Venetian, which was, 2007 or something like that? 2006?
That's right, yeah. Well, 2004 we opened up. Right. I arrived in January 03.
Right.
And we started the development and opening from there.
So I've been following your career ever since then, and you've had an interesting career for sure. But now you're in a spot, I think, where your talents are really being appreciated at Grand Ho Tram. So let's start when you first arrived there. It was 4 years ago now, and what did you see when you got there, and what changes have you made since then?
Well, the most interesting thing was when I transitioned from Macau to Vietnam, and I had lived literally, as we mentioned, in Macau for 18 years.
Right.
I came with one suitcase to Vietnam, and my intention was to go back and forth and gradually move my clothes, my personal effects, little by little. Well, when I showed up in February of 4 years ago, 2020, COVID showed up the day after I arrived.
Right.
The borders closed, and I literally took me 3 years to get back to Macau to close down a house that I had lived in 18 years with 18 years worth of stuff in it.
Right.
So so that was the first challenge, but Roger, I want to thank you for speaking with me today. You're the icon in this industry, not myself, so I'm honored to be here today. But I would say that looking back on the Ho Tram, it had been operating for about 8-9 years before I got here, I think the strategy was wrong. I think the people that had run this place before, they saw it as a beach resort in Vietnam with a small casino attached to it, and what I simply did was to embrace the same strategy that we had used in Macau and that the Venetian had used in Las Vegas, and say, no, this is an integrated resort. The center and even a driver of the resort is the casino operation, and everything else is ancillary. And although each department is viewed as a profit center in itself, the bottom line is driven from the casino.
Sure.
And so that's number one. That's what we did to start turning the place around. It had been acquired by a large private equity firm called Warburg Pincus. I think they have about $80 billion assets under management. And so when they purchased this property in 2019, they changed out the management, and that's kind of when I showed up.
Right.
So as I mentioned, it was certainly a strategy change from a number of perspectives. And then secondly, the big thing was to simply focus on the so-called local market. We are a foreign passport only casino, similar to what you have in places like Korea as well. And I've always contended, and if you've heard me speak before, I've always said that in my career, I've never come across one successful casino that did not have as its primary market a local component. What does that mean?
Right.
In my mind, you know, Macau is Macau, not because folks are flying in from Beijing or Shanghai. It's because there's 90 million people in Guangdong province.
Right.
That's the local market. Vegas is Vegas because it's not because people are flying in from Detroit, Chicago, New York to play craps on the strip. It's because Southern California is a four-hour car ride. So what we started doing is put a big emphasis on the expat market in Ho Chi Minh, and it's quite large, quite vibrant, because you know, the metropolis itself of Vietnam is about 15 million people, and is a center of economic activity in Vietnam. So with that comes all the big international companies, especially a lot of the big Korean companies, a lot of big Taiwanese companies, Chinese companies, and so that's what we went after. To drive the business here.
Sure, absolutely. But when you first got there is the pandemic. I mean, what was Vietnam like during the pandemic? I mean, obviously you couldn't bring anybody in. I mean, China had locked down. Most of the Asian countries had locked down. How did you survive that?
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting here. In my opinion, you know, my personal observation, the government of Vietnam did a very good job handling the pandemic. If we remember back, you know, before vaccines became a thing, you know, isolation, separation,
sure,
and masks
were the
attempt to control the pandemic. And Vietnam did a very good job, and the Vietnamese people did a good job of using that to control the spread. And then when vaccines came online, because of the strategic relationship between the United States and Vietnam, there were tens of millions of vaccines sent to Vietnam from the United States. And I believe Vietnam was the most highly vaccinated country in Asia, and or second highest in Asia, only behind China. But, you know, the efficacy of the vaccines in China are probably suspect to a certain degree. So you could maybe call Vietnam the most highly vaccinated country in Asia. So we combined that with support from the provincial and national government. We basically created a bubble here at Ho Tram, where we literally tested every team member that came in and every team member that came out. We tested every customer, every guest that came in and came out, every casino guest in and out. They were tested, and so it became a safe haven. So we were allowed to stay open. And actually, we had some significant players come here just because of the safety of the protocols that we had set up. The government supported us, allowed us to stay open in this bubble. And I still to this day believe that we may have been the only casino on the planet that remained open during the pandemic and that remained profitable every quarter during the pandemic.
Yeah, I can't think of another casino anywhere in the U.S. or Europe or even in Asia that stayed open throughout the entire time. Interesting.
Yes. So
you mentioned that you're still a foreign national's passport casino. How does that impact how you market the property?
Well, you know, obviously we're limited. We have to be very focused. And what we do, you know, again, I should also mention for those that have not been to Ho Tram, we're about two and a half hour car ride from Ho Chi Minh, our primary market, depending on what part of Ho Chi Minh you arrive from. So that's a challenge. Now, we are the only integrated resort with a casino in southern Vietnam. So in that sense, we have a monopoly, but you still have that challenge of the 2.5 hour car ride. So what we do is we've become an event-driven property to give a reason for people to overcome that 2.5 hour car ride and come to Ho Tram. So, for example, we're big in combat sports. We've teamed up with WBO, World Boxing Organization. We've had championship fights here. We've had mixed martial arts events here. We teamed up with a Korean promotion called AFC. We were actually going to offer our first kickboxing event on April 13th of this year. So we have things. We have at least one combat sport every month. We have what I would refer to as a traditional casino VIP event every month.
Sure.
Where we invite our casino customers. You know, you've been there, seen them.
Sure.
We have entertainment, great food. So we use that. And whether it's golf course or a beauty pageant We've actually even had horse racing along the beach, believe it or not, here at Ho-Tram. So we create events to give people a reason to either drive from Ho Chi Minh or literally fly from, you know, Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, etc. to give us a try.
Sure.
So we've embraced that philosophy. And then again, as the Venetian embraced, or maybe Sheldon Adelson should be credited as being the driver of this. You know, you focus on MICE and tour groups during the week, and you focus on the casino business during the weekends. So we've been successful doing that.
So you have people that must have the foreign passports, but there's a lot of expats that live in Vietnam. I mean, how much of a audience is that for you?
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting from two points. Number one, there is a group of Vietnamese citizens. They're referred to as Viet Q. And basically, they're Vietnamese citizens who fled Vietnam right after the war. Between the United States and Vietnam. They went to Australia. They went to America. They went to Malaysia, Singapore, got their educations there, became successful, and now have come back to Vietnam to open up businesses, to be senior executives of various firms. So, and they're basically double passport holders. So as long as you have a foreign passport, I don't care where you were born.
Sure.
And so that's a part of our business. But getting back to your point at on expats, it's actually quite difficult to even estimate the number of expats in Ho Chi Minh. You think that'd be very easy, that you could contact chambers of commerce from various countries. You could contact embassies and consulates. And get an accurate number, but no one has those numbers because a lot of people don't register with the consulates and things of that nature.
Sure, right.
So, but my own estimate is that I believe it's probably somewhere around 500,000 expats in Ho Chi Minh. Again, difficult to verify.
Right.
So about half, that's with families and everything like that. So,
right.
A metropolis of 15 million people with about 500,000 expats. Most of them, largest segment is Korean.
Yeah.
Second highest, I believe, would be Chinese mainland.
Yeah.
Third would be Taiwan. And then you have, rest of Southeast Asia and Asia.
Sure. Okay, great. So how do you control access to your casino?
Well, because we're required to have a foreign passport, every guest walking into the casino is required to have a player card. And to get a player card, they have to register with not only their passport, but the visa which they entered Vietnam.
Okay.
They have to have legally entered Vietnam.
Right.
So we do that, and then we have a card system and a swipe system, which controls not only entrances but departures from the casino. All the play is carded
right
on the gaming tables, and obviously we have both security and surveillance.
Sure.
Watching. The gates and the games, making sure people aren't using other people's cards, things of that nature.
Sure. Well, that must give you a lot of control over your guests. I mean, you obviously can track the play of every guest that walks in there.
Yes. Yeah. Well. For sure. I kind of joke that just because there's a law against robbing banks, that doesn't mean people aren't going to try to rob banks.
Sure, right.
So we catch a couple of people that have used somebody else's card, and we've just, we've asked them to leave when we do that. But it is very controlled, and I'm pretty comfortable with the system we have there now.
Okay. So in terms of the casino, how many tables and slots do you have?
Yeah, we have 90 table games. Mm-hmm. We've split that up. 45 are located in our VIP area.
Uh-huh.
45 are mass. All of our VIP tables are baccarat, and then on the main floor, I'd say maybe 60%, 70% are baccarat. Then obviously roulette, blackjack, poker variations, things of that nature. We have currently on electronic gaming machines, we have a total of about 450 games. And we do have some electronic table games. We have a typical stadium that offers both baccarat and roulette, and then the rest are electronic gaming machines. And we're in the process of updating our slot floor.
Right.
And when I showed up, 4 years ago, it was the machines were from day one.
Really.
and they were simply not They're simply not competitive.
Sure, right.
And there are electronic gaming parlors in Ho Chi Minh attached to five-star hotels.
Okay.
So you have to give a reason for a slot player to make that travel,
right,
when in fact he can get modern, modern games, 10 minutes from his home. So we're starting to replenish the floor. We'll shortly be up to about 140 new games. And hopefully we'll be able to keep that momentum going.
Okay, I didn't realize that there was that play available in Ho Chi Minh City.
Yeah, there's an opportunity for any five star resort or five star hotel in Ho Chi Minh to apply for the electronic gaming license, and they're allowed to have electronic table games as well. And I don't know, I can't recall the exact number, but maybe a dozen or so. Maybe slightly more in Ho Chi Minh,
okay,
and obviously more spread across Vietnam.
Sure, absolutely. So tell us about the trip from Ho Chi Minh City. I mean, I understand it's not that far as the crow flies, but the traffic is not the best.
Yeah, the good news has certainly gotten better. From what I've heard, 5-6 years ago, it could take 4 or 5 hours,
right,
to get from Ho Chi Minh to Hao Cham. And now, I've made the trip in 1:45 from the door of Ho Tram to,
sure,
to the eastern side of Ho Chi Minh City, where I trained jiu-jitsu at an academy there. And so that's certainly getting better. The traffic is certainly still an issue. But the good news is, in the midterm, is that the new international airport in Vietnam and for Ho Chi Minh is being built about halfway between Ho Chi Minh and Ho Tram.
Oh, great.
So that drive time will be reduced from two hours to 2.5 hours to maybe an hour.
Yeah. Okay.
And as part of that effort, the province and the adjacent provinces are upgrading their road system, highways,
mm-hmm,
road networks. So that'll make the drive time even better. As I mentioned earlier, location and accessibility is the number one competitive advantage that any property should seek.
Sure.
And that'll certainly improve our operation, even if we still have that restriction for foreign passport holders. And hopefully that will be modified in the near future.
Sure. Okay, great. So what's the breakdown in terms of visitors to your property in terms of the countries they arrive from?
Yeah, I would say, just as an estimate, I would say 40% of our customers are from Korea.
Okay.
About 28% are from mainland China, about 22% from Taiwan. So from that perspective, Putonghua combination is bigger than Korea,
right,
but Taiwan is certainly not mainland China. But as a single country, Korea is our biggest customer. And then you go to Southeast Asia, such as Malaysia, Singapore, and then you have the expat market, VQ market.
Sure.
From Australia, U.S., et cetera.
Okay. So you've got several hotel brands associated with your property. How does that benefit the property? Their database as well?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's actually, I would have to say, the primary reason why the company negotiated a contract with both Intercontinental,
uh-huh,
and our first tower is branded Intercontinental. Our second tower is branded Holiday Inn Resorts. And they're both very nice. They're both five-star.
Right.
Sometimes our Holiday Inn Resorts generates a higher room rate than the Intercontinental.
Wow.
So I always kind of joke that I'm surprised people didn't get the memo on
right,
the Holiday Inn Resorts. It's supposed to be a lower price point than Intercontinental. I recall when I was 8 years old in Detroit, driving up to a Holiday Inn, and getting a key and walking in the door of your room. But it's a little bit different here. And then we have 550 rooms in each of those towers. So that represents 1,100 hotel rooms. And then we have a combination condo hotel and villa system,
uh-huh,
which is in our rental pool, of another approximately just under 300 rooms. And so we called Exora. And then the next phase, actually even bigger than that, Exora 1, is starting development as we speak.
Great. So how about meetings and conventions? Do you have a lot of them coming in?
Yeah, with a robust business community in Ho Chi Minh,
sure,
all the internationals will come here for their events.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's the whole MICE platform, you'll see, you know, might be Samsung, might be, it's a big, large Taiwanese company.
Right.
It could be a KPMG, you know, could be Suntory Pepsi.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, you know, the government uses this as a platform for large government meetings. We're hosting one of the deputy prime ministers tomorrow, as a matter of fact, for a province-wide meeting for planning and reporting. So it's various platforms, and we try to go after all of them simultaneously.
Okay, great. So have you learned to speak Vietnamese?
Oh, it's difficult. I've come to the conclusion. In Macau, I try to learn Putonghua, but sure. As you know, it's the Guangdong Hua.
Right.
Cantonese is spoken on the street. So I was always confusing the two languages and using both languages in the same sentence.
Right.
And Vietnamese with its tonation is as difficult as Cantonese, yeah. I think. So I've reduced my Vietnamese to the four most important words in Vietnamese.
Right.
That's mo hai bat yo.
Right.
When spoken, 1, 2, 3, drink.
Right.
And that's gotten me got me along pretty good in
that's
the last
good.
4 years.
I'm sure you have some interpreters that help you out there too.
Yes, for sure. Absolutely.
So you mentioned the golf course, and I hear that's a really spectacular golf course. What are the amenities you have there?
Yeah, it's a links course designed by Greg Norman, it was rated not only the number one golf course in Vietnam, but the number one golf course in Southeast Asia. So that's a prime, you know, outside the casino, that's a primary driver
sure.
for our marketing efforts and our arrivals here at Ho Tram. You know, I haven't played golf in years, and when I did, I was a very poor golfer. But I've come to realize that there are some folks out there that literally just travel the world and play the world's
sure.
best courses.
That's right.
And they have a bucket list, and they chip them. Yep. They check those boxes off. So we have folks like that even coming in. And for example, last weekend we hosted the Lexus Cup at the Bluffs Golf Course,
sure.
and that's kind of like the former Nike, and I'm not sure
right.
what it's called now, but the former Nike Tour
sure.
in the U.S. And it's kind of just under the Asian Professional Tour.
Right.
So there's some, you know, top-notch, up-and-coming professional golfers.
Sure. And I love links courses. So how about your restaurants? What kind of restaurants do you have?
Well, we have a total of, I think with all the properties, about 18 restaurants.
Really?
So there's a wide variety. But we have a French bistro / steakhouse restaurant. We have a Chinese restaurant. We have a Vietnamese seafood restaurant. We have a food court, we have, you know, not necessarily restaurant, but
sure.
we have a nightclub, we have a sports bar. So there's a wide variety of food offerings. And you know, as you know, food is so important from a cultural perspective.
Yeah.
I always mention, you know, language and food are the two most important things. You have to serve both of those, needs. And, so we have a lot of Korean dishes in our restaurants. And we have a Chinese restaurant, but a lot of Chinese dishes in the other restaurants.
Great, great. So there's currently one casino in Vietnam that allows Vietnamese citizens to gamble. and I know that that's coming up for review pretty shortly. How is that experiment going?
You're 100% correct. The only casino in Vietnam that locals are allowed to gamble is called the Corona Casino in
right.
Phu Quoc.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's on an island. That's a resort island, destination island. And the original pilot program to test, you know, the impact that the gaming activity for locals would have on society was extended for 2 years, about 1 year ago. So there's one
right.
year left in that pilot. And I believe that once the pilot is done, the government will evaluate, you know, the pros and cons, evaluate the data that they achieved from their experience at Phu Quoc, and decide to end the program, expand the program, or continue the program.
Sure.
And I'm not aware of any major negative impact from the operation at Phu Quoc. Maybe the benefits haven't been as good as you might expect, but that's because you have to fly to get to
sure.
Phu Quoc
right.
Island, even
right.
whether you're Vietnamese or a foreigner. So it might be a little bit different experience here. So, when you look at the potential benefits and of opening up to locals, and I always use the, the acronym JET, J-E-T, and anyone can use those at any casino. J stands for the jobs that it creates. E is a spinoff economic development aside from the property. And T, and maybe most importantly, the tax generation. I think that would be a big boon to not just the property here, but to the province and Southern Vietnam as a tourism destination. Sure. Nation. I've estimated that I think we might as much as triple the tax revenue that we pay off to the provincial government if we're allowed to participate in that program. And we're actively, you know, having conversations with the government. You know, we have a common friend, Fred Gushin at Spectrum Gaming.
Sure.
We commissioned and they finished a social impact study to try to brief the government on what will happen if locals are allowed to gamble at OTREM. And we'll be disseminating that amongst government officials. It's a collective decision-making process in the Vietnamese political system. So we'll have to address, you know, the Politburo, the provincial level, the prime Sure. minister, president, the secretary of the party, things of that nature to get it done. It won't be easy, but we're hopeful that will be viewed positively to be involved, included in that project.
Sure. Would you be open to a type of Singapore situation where you have to, you know, declare, you know, a certain amount of income and also pay an entry fee?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, look, I would adopt the exact same controls that Singapore has. If you told me I could have locals gaming today,
yeah,
for sure. Now that those same controls are in place, maybe not identical to Singapore, but there is a declaration of income, things of that nature, at Phu Quoc.
Yeah.
So that, you know, there are some players that are not comfortable doing that.
Sure.
And so there are Vietnamese players that could fly to Phu Quoc, but they still continue to fly to Singapore, Manila,
right,
Macau, etc.
Okay.
But I would certainly accept that in a second, because of the tremendous potential that local gaming at Ho Tram would have.
Sure.
And you know, if you don't mind me thinking back, you know, my first casino job was with a small American Indian tribe in northern Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And at that place, all the proceeds, all the profits of the casino operation went directly to fund the government and to build roads, to build medical centers for women's programs, drug treatment programs, fish hatcheries, you know, things of that nature.
Sure, right.
And I could personally see the benefit that my operation was bringing to the community. You know, once you get into the bigger operations, it's making rich guys richer,
right,
basically. But so I could see that the extra revenue that we could generate for the provincial government here in Barrio Vungtao province would go a long way to improving society.
Sure, absolutely. So you mentioned your experience in Macau. How does it help you manage Grand Ho Tram?
Well, you know, that's a good question. You know, maybe if I could, you know, some people have asked me what was different about my experience in Macau, let's say opening the Sands and coming here to Ho Tram, which was a turnaround situation. And the way I was reflecting on it is that in Macau, you know, we were the first Western casino at Sands, but we still had to decide, you know, what games to offer, in what denominations, and how many baccarats, how many blackjacks, slot machines,
right,
player programs. And myself, and a shout out to my good friend, Dennis Andreacci, who's an icon, sure, in this industry.
Absolutely.
And we just go to the Lisboa, which was really the legacy casino, and see what was working there and try to figure out what we should build at the Sands. Now we opened the Sands up and we were wildly successful. But you never know, you know, what is because of the thought process that went into planning the place, the architecture, or simply that it was the first Western casino in Macau, and it turned out to be a mob scene. You know, the best right. stat that I'd like to share is that when I was operating the Sands Macau, we consumed 40,000 decks of cards every single day.
Right.
40,000 decks every day. So we were shuffling 40,000 decks, we were dealing 40,000 decks, and we were destroying 40,000 decks, which... Now, if there's so many casinos, I don't think that'll ever be mashed. But then so compare that to coming to Vietnam, which is a turnaround situation. At that point, you have to decide what will work in this market based on your experience, your beliefs, what truisms that you have about this industry, what anecdotes work, what paradigms don't work.
Right.
And then decide on the strategy and, you know, execute that strategy as aggressively as you can. And so, quite honestly, Vietnam was more rewarding than Macau because we were very successful here at Ho Tram. And it was basically because what I believed what was true actually was true. And I could look in the mirror and say, mm-hmm. I guess I could say to myself, I guess I know what I'm doing here and what I believe is actually true.
Sure.
So that was the big difference of my Macau experience and in the Vietnam experience. But, I think as far as decision-making goes and leadership goes, I think you have to start with technical expertise. I think that's the first stop in developing leader, being a good decision maker. And you get technical expertise by being curious.
Right.
And by if you're not curious, there's nothing I can do for you. But if you're curious, you know, and you're interested in the market, then or the industry, you know, you learn the games. The first thing I did when I got my first casino gig, and I came from outside the industry, I enrolled myself in the dealer training program.
Sure,
I learned how to deal blackjack, right. Craps, roulette, etc.
That's what.
You have to be curious first. Secondly, is being a skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of paradigms in this industry that simply are not true.
Right.
And so you have to challenge everything you see and determine if it makes sense. And third, use the scientific method. If you have a theory on why something will work or it doesn't work, then you should be able to prove it mathematically,
right,
or by experience, by testing it. So that's where your technical expertise comes from. But then but technical expertise combined with experience, that leads to intuition. Because if you just have the technical expertise, you don't know, it's all theory,
right?
But if you have the experience of I've had the honor and the luck of working on four different continents in this industry, and you can see what works and what hasn't worked, and you can make decisions without having complete analysis, which the analogy I use for that is that all right, chess grandmasters. I'm addicted to Western chess. I play chess every day on the internet against other players. And most people that don't play chess think that grandmasters evaluate every single potential move in a game and select the best move based on that analysis. And that's simply not the case. You know, just because of their technical expertise and their experience, they can eliminate maybe 97%. Maybe 98% of all moves,
right,
and they just focus on those last 2% that are potentially the right move, and sort of save their analysis for that, and then make the move based on that. So that's what experience gives you, at least that intuition. And then once you get that intuition, you have to have confidence, and that's something that's built up over time,
right.
Successes over time, absorbing failures over time, and because you're not always going to make decisions with perfect information. Matter of fact, just going back to a chess analogy, I play what's called blitz chess or bullet chess. And in one variation of chess I play, each player has 1 minute for the whole game. 1 minute,
wow,
for the whole game. So it's on with a mouse going pop, 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 pop.
Yeah.
And you're making moves based on intuition and pattern recognition, things of that nature. And I think that's a good proxy for business, because you can't always make decisions with perfect information, because you simply don't have either the time or the information.
Sure.
So again, that intuition, the confidence that you know what you're doing, allows you to make good decisions. And so that's really served me well. And finally, I have to say, I learned more about decision making and leadership from spending 15 years in the U.S. Marine Corps, being an officer there. And that served me as well as anything, as much as my education,
sure,
my MBA from Michigan, things of that nature. So
right.
It's a combination of things, certainly.
Yeah, no question about it. So one last question, where would you like to see Ho Tram in the short term and in the long term?
Well, again, over the next year, we're going to be working very hard for this local gaming initiative. And if we're successful in that, then I'll be able to see Ho Tram come to its full fruition.
Yeah.
The development of other non-gaming amenities will certainly accelerate. So that'll be a good thing. So that's kind of the eyes on the prize. And maybe if we get local gaming. Maybe you'll come visit us at HOTRAM yourself.
I would love to do that for sure. Well, Walt, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm sure our listeners and viewers will do the same. And I really hope to see you sometime in the near future, for sure.
I look forward to it, Roger. Always a pleasure talking with you, and appreciate your contributions to the industry.
Great. Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast sponsored by iGaming Player, the premier affiliated marketing site that delivers quality players to your online casino, sportsbook, or poker room with transparency and integrity. To learn more about the topics we just discussed, visit ggbmagazine.com. Subscribe to GGB News to get all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning. Sign up at ggbnews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.